Pop Health Podcast is a public service of 24-Hour Home Care.
Hi there, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Pop Health Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Morgan. I'm really excited to share this episode with you today. I was recently invited to the Brookdale Senior Living headquarters in Nashville, Tennessee, for a conversation with their Vice President of Business Development, Christian Lanham. Most of you have probably heard of Brookdale, but in case you have not, it's the country's largest senior living provider with over 1,100 communities spanning the nation. Christian plays a huge role in their growth and development, and she and I explored the ways that assisted living is joining into the care continuum and the discussion about outcomes in ways that it never has. This is a really great interview. It spans a lot of different topics, and I really hope that you enjoy it. As always, you can find us on our website at pophealthpodcast.com or on iTunes. Also, we had gotten some questions from listeners about getting the podcast onto Stitcher, and we're happy to announce that it is, in fact, on Stitcher. So you can listen across any platform, including, you know, iPhone or Android. Last thing, you can always find me on Twitter at PopHealthZach. We really welcome any feedback that you have and hope that you enjoy this episode. Thanks a lot. Hello, everyone. I'm actually out in Nashville. It's my first time in Nashville. Are you from this area?
No, I'm not. I was born in Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay.
But I've lived mostly in Florida my adult life.
Okay.
I moved up here about 3 years ago.
It is. It's a beautiful place. We were talking. I was met by a true thunderstorm getting off the airplane yesterday. That was something that I don't see all the time in Southern California, but have eaten some really delicious barbecue already, which was what everybody kept telling me coming here, even on a short trip. But I digress. It's really nice to be here. Thank you for spending some time to sit down and talk with me. We're really excited. Yeah, absolutely. We're really excited to be able to explore some of the residential senior living options and how that works both for families and also on the continuum of care and with some of the different initiatives that are coming up, especially with reducing readmissions and those kinds of things. Yeah, before we jump in too far, we always ask, can you tell the audience something that they might not know about you, maybe outside of work?
Oh boy, there's lots of things that people don't know about me, but I think that the big thing that I enjoy that probably most people don't know is that I love horses, and I've had horses on and off my whole life, starting out in the backyard of my farm, and have gone into hunter jumpers, polo, finished playing polo a couple of years ago, and now have a retired polo pony that I pleasure ride, and probably looking to get into some dressage. For my future. I also enjoy the ballet. I go to New York a couple times a month to go see my niece and go to the New York City Ballet. So I love the arts.
Excellent. So here in Tennessee, what is the riding like? Are there open spaces to ride, or is it mostly like...
Tennessee is really a horse mecca, as is Kentucky and the areas, the states in the Midwestern part of the country and the South. I think that the thing that's wonderful about Nashville and horses is that you have such a diversity. So you have fox hunting, polo, the hunter jumper scenes really, really predominant here. And you just have a lot of options for riding at all different levels.
Yeah. Well, that's an excellent way to unwind after working in the senior living industry all day. So you currently work for Brookdale. You have been here for a couple of years now, 4 or 5 years, correct?
Yes, at Brookdale. Five, yes.
So just to give our audience a little bit of a background if they don't know already, can you tell us a little bit about the Brookdale experience and what that means for residents and also their families?
So Brookdale is known to be the largest senior housing provider. So we have close to 1,100 communities across the country. So that's unique in that for every location, there's an opportunity for an experience with a family member or for a resident.
Sure.
So we also offer assisted living, independent living, memory care, and skilled nursing. And our skilled nursing services, which are really short-term rehabilitation for people that have an injury or go to the hospital and need short-term rehab to go home, they also take care of the residents that are on campus and or in those assisted livings in the surrounding market. So that's very unique as well. So our skilled nursing centers are located within a CCRC, a continuous care retirement campus. And so anyone can access the skilled nursing component either from the hospital as someone who has no experience with Brookdale, or if they are a resident currently within our Brookdale family, they can also have the opportunity to utilize our skilled nursing services.
Yeah, and we're going to jump into that in just a little bit, but it is so important to having all of those services in different service lines within the same community can be such a benefit. But you had mentioned the size. Aside from that, how does Brookdale differentiate itself? Obviously, in healthcare and in senior care and in residential living, there are a million companies all across. How does Brookdale differentiate itself?
Well, in many ways, but from a care delivery standpoint, we have a continuum that none of our competition has. So if someone were to come into our assisted living or independent living, we also have private duty nursing services for those that are more independent. And then we also have home health, and we have hospice services. So people have accessibility to every level of care other than obviously the acute setting.
Right. And you had mentioned the size. Most people might not know that residential senior living is oftentimes kind of regional. And so there are powerhouses within certain regions. But you had mentioned that Brookdale has been able to expand nationwide and is obviously significantly larger than different other competitors in the space. How has Brookdale been able to replicate what's successful regionally into a national model?
Well, the national model is secondary to the local business, right? Mm-hmm. So really it comes down to, even though you're a large organization, it's still at the end of the day a local business,
right?
Which means those individuals that we choose to take care of our loved ones and our families and their loved ones is really what's most important. So the overall mission of the company is to enrich the lives of the resident as well as the caregiver,
right,
and to ensure that they have everything that they need for a very vital life.
Right. And it is true, as someone who in my other life works with some of the Brookdale communities in different areas, while they all have the Brookdale similarities, each one has its own character to it based
Absolutely.
On the residents mm-hmm. and the team there. And so that it does make a lot of sense that it has to focus on the community first. So for the audience, you had mentioned some of the different levels in the continuum that you have. Can you explain the different levels of residential care for the audience if they might not know?
Sure. So what I normally do is I look at the whole spectrum of care delivery from the acute side being the hospital. Then you have what's called an LTAC or long-term acute care hospital, and then an IRF, which is an inpatient rehab facility.
Sure.
So those are what I consider the higher acuity providers.
Right.
From there, you have a post-acute care delivery model, which LTACs and IRFs are included in that post-acute care delivery model. But predominantly, what I mean by that is from skilled nursing, you go to assisted living. And then with home health, you can stay in an assisted living with a pretty high acuity, actually.
Right.
Or even go home with a higher acuity than we have been able to see historically.
Sure.
So assisted living is really a service model for people that need assistance with daily living, or what we call ADLs.
Right.
That's bathing, grooming, assistance with medications,
sure,
that type of thing. Whereas someone who is more independent and that just wants a nice lifestyle and have their meals provided for them and their lawn taken care of,
right,
may really choose independent living.
Right.
Memory care, of course, are for those individuals that have some memory lapses and or dementia and or Alzheimer's needs. And we have that service as well.
So does Brookdale do some of the communities have all three levels from independent and assisted and memory care?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, actually, we have several of those. So those are the CCRCs that I mentioned,
right,
earlier. So people can come in independent if they like and enjoy a wonderful lifestyle. And then as they need more assistance, they can kind of graduate into the next level of service and never really have to move.
Right. And not all communities have the different levels of service.
That's
what,
correct,
unfortunately,
yes,
what you see sometimes is that as people progress into needing a higher level of care, that they're also forced to then maybe move to different communities or to different places of living. So because you have all the different levels throughout some of your communities, how important is that to the aging process and also to just comfort and to family comfort to be able to level up if you need to, but also stay in a familiar community?
Well, there's two different ways of looking at that. So if you're in a freestanding assisted living, which we have those as well, right. And should you need a higher level of acuity or a different setting, at least you can stay within the same company so that we're transitioning your care right. from one venue to another instead of having that new venue start all over. You see what right. I'm saying? So there's that collaboration, that communication within the Brookdale clinical family,
sure.
if you will, to make sure that someone's taken care of. On the other side of the spectrum, you also have those ancillary services that can be provided in the setting that they're currently in so that they have that subsidy, if you will, of services to help them stay in that current environment.
Right.
So let's say that someone had a fall, something happened, they go to the hospital, they have to have a surgery. They would maybe go to skilled nursing for a very short period of time to stabilize. And then they would come back to their assisted living with home health.
Right.
So that home health service is in addition to the assisted living care that would enable them to come home sooner
right.
than to stay in skilled nursing longer. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that what you're saying is obviously important to people to be able to stay within the family of whether it's Brookdale as a provider or even within a community that has those multiple levels of care. Obviously, for people that work in senior care of any sort, you know that as the aging process happens, the less change that can happen usually is the better as people tend to progress. And so I would imagine that people enjoy the ability to stay within that family as they continue to age.
Well, certainly you get attached to the caregivers. I mean, that's what I really see is something that's very touching,
right.
being in this business as long as I've been in it, is that the people that work with these residents, our loved ones, I mean, they're all part of the family. They really, really are passionate about what they do. They care about their residents and they become intertwined in their lives
right.
and in their families' lives. And that's not something that... as people age, they may lose their own family around them and their friends.
Right.
And so they tend to really, become emotionally engaged in their caretakers. And it's a wonderful thing to see.
Absolutely. So Brookdale probably first connects with families, much like with home care or other kind of senior services, not necessarily always in the most glorious circumstances that they've been under. Sometimes they're under a little bit of stress or they're making big life decisions on whether to go with assisted living or whether they need to get caregiver or home health or make those big life.
It could be confusing.
A confusing and challenging time. Absolutely. So on the residential side, what are the most common concerns or objections that you face when people are considering that?
Oh, I think it would be the same for anyone, regardless of where they are in life or their age or anything else. And that is, leaving what you know and are familiar with, and that's
right.
home.
Right.
So that's really the number one reason why people tend not to want to move.
Sure.
But there's also that component of leaving the familiar and the adventure of the new and understanding that there's going to be a lot of opportunity with having that liberation, that freedom of not having to worry about, taking care of the lawn, not having to worry
right.
about making meals. The social component is huge
I
because
bet.
What we see a lot is that people tend to feel isolated and then therefore start to feel a little depressed.
Right.
And so if they have other people around them with similar likes, they tend to find a new lease on life and
right.
tend to want to be more engaged and therefore really start to enjoy their new living environment in the assisted living or independent living community.
Yeah. Is that a big part of painting the picture for them? Is obviously there are many components, like you said, but is the social factor a big part of painting the picture for people?
I think about it. I mean, it's what makes us feel that we are ourselves,
sure.
that we are our independent entity of what we like to do, right?
Right.
So I think the key is finding that community that sings to your heart. So, you want to find, if you're an art enthusiast, you would want to find a community that has a painting club. Or,
sure.
we have gentlemen's groups that, we have in the assisted livings and independent livings, and they have their workshops and they do their pool hall and they watch sports all day and drink beer and play pool. It's awesome,
right.
So it's all about finding what keeps you alive in your heart and your soul, I think, and looking for people that have similar interests to help you maintain your independence.
Right. And I think that goes back to what you were talking about earlier about having the Brookdale structure, but then having each community have their own personality. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So kind of on the flip side, what are the most common misconceptions about senior living?
I think that, first of all, as an industry, and I mean that in whole and mass, we have to continue to educate people about the different levels of service and what's available to them. I think there's still that misperception that it's very institutional and that I'm going there towards the end of my life, when in actuality, it's really not that case at all.
Right.
And I think that if people were to tour an assisted living or independent living community, they would see a very vital, dynamic environment in which, you know, you have, it's almost like a cruise ship would be, or a hotel. I stay at a lot of hotels. I like hotels. I'm one of those people that just kind of enjoy them. But you also have individuals that are in the lobby and in the common areas that are having that conversation and being a part of something that's bigger. And I think that that's probably the biggest thing that I see, that there's a misperception that it's very institutional and cold, when in actuality, it's not.
I try to explain that to people quite often about all sorts of different senior services, that it's really viewed as a loss of independence, when in actuality, I always see it as trying to help hold on to as much independence as possible for as long as possible.
Absolutely. So, if I had someone drive me around to the movie and to take me out to dinner and, you know, to go to the ballet, that would be great, you know.
And the food is excellent.
Very, very nice. And some of them have even bistros and several different restaurants within the campus. So you can even get room service, which is, you know, that's a benefit all in itself.
You had mentioned some of the post-acute care services that you offer, both with the skilled nursing side, but more specifically on the home health and home care side. Has that always been a part of the Brookdale family, or is that something that was added as the company grew and as the communities grew?
I think both. I think originally the ancillary services were designed to support the residents that we have in the community. And now we've seen that based upon the growth of the company and or the need of the surrounding communities, that we've looked at what makes sense for Brookdale to expand in certain markets. And that's kind of what we look at is the need there, are the demographics there, and then does it make good business sense to start a new service in a particular geographic area.
Sure. And so are those, just I guess for my own curiosity, are those services just for the residents inside the building, or does Brookdale also serve the surrounding community with those other post-acute services?
We do both.
Okay.
We take care of those residents, what we call inside the walls, and then we have services that we offer to individuals outside the walls, which is a nice thing if you think about it, because if you're in skilled nursing and then you want to go home, you can have our home health come in, meet you while you're still in the skilled nursing center. And of course, they always have a choice on where they want to go. But I'm just saying, in this example, it would be they choose Brookdale Home Health. Then they would just have that continuation of that service at home.
Sure.
Some of people even choose to stay in an assisted living for a while.
Right.
They don't have anyone to take care of them at home. Or they're a little bit just too frail to go home alone, or even home with home health.
Right.
They choose to stay for short-term stay in an assisted living.
Right. On the business side, too, it's an excellent way to already connect with people in the community who one day might be looking into residential options as well. And so just staying on the business side, being a residential care provider, you had mentioned some of the different factors about the other ancillary services. Mm-hmm. Are there other things that drive those, or is it just based on each individual market and what it seems could be beneficial in that market? Because we know, working across states and different regulations, especially, you know, working whether it's in the home or in a residential community, are there other things that drive this place might have home health, not home care, this place might have both, those kinds of things?
Well, I think that it really depends upon each community. Like I said earlier, it's really a local business.
Sure.
But I think that the key is that there's been somewhat of a shift since the Affordable Care Act in how referral sources integrate with the post-acute care continuum and their perception of quality.
Right.
And I think that's key with everything in healthcare, of course, is quality. But that drives a lot of the referral patterns, if you will, from, you know, acute care settings and or, you know, physicians. It also is very important that we understand what the community needs are from a non-healthcare professional standpoint as well. So it doesn't make sense in every market to do everything.
Yeah.
Especially if you don't have a full continuum in every market, but there's been a very focused strategy from my team, for example, on who specifically to target to talk about the unique positioning of the company to generate additional leads to the communities.
Yeah, that's actually an excellent segue into some other things that I wanted to ask you about.
Sure.
With the current climate, the way that it is, things changing with the Affordable Care Act and a lot of shift in the way that care is delivered across the continuum. How do you see the future for residential care moving forward?
Very bright.
Yeah.
It's underutilized at this time, I believe. However, right. I have seen a snowball effect of interest and need here in the last year and a half. What's changed is that, you know, hospitals are under a lot of pressure to make sure they're admitting inpatient the appropriate patient.
Right.
So in other words, there's a criteria that they have to meet in order to be considered an inpatient stay in a hospital. So with that, there's become this need for observation. Mm-hmm. And so people that don't meet the criteria for inpatient stay in what's called an observation unit.
Right.
And they're observed, obviously, to see what other needs they would need and or to get their test results as to whether or not they would be appropriate for an inpatient stay.
Right.
You also have the emergency department visits, and then the hospitals have to determine how do they triage that patient. So a lot of times what's happening is that there is this area in which the hospital says, you know, we need to make sure that you're going home safely, that you have the services that you need, and you don't necessarily meet the criteria to go in skilled nursing, nor do you have the support at home
right.
to really meet the criteria of having enough supervision for home health. So there's this opportunity to, you know, utilize assisted living for those people that are in the observation unit and or come back and forth to the emergency department in the hospital. So the hospital's goal is to make sure that they're doing an appropriate job of discharging people to the appropriate setting. And it's our job as a post-acute care provider to ensure that they stay well and then
right.
in the environment that they're in and to keep them from bouncing back to the hospital.
So stepping outside of Brookdale, just for the industry in general,
sure.
do you see, because of that, do you see a rise industry-wide of respite stays or of people who maybe aren't moving out of their home yet, but like you mentioned, maybe don't have the support at the moment that they're at? Or does that stay relatively consistent and the residential communities come in and help in other ways?
Well, we're doing a lot of respite stays now with bundles,
yeah.
Orthopedic bundles specifically, because they really post-op, it's become so advanced with technology
yeah.
that they really
basically.
Don't need,
yeah.
unless they have comorbidities.
Right.
But most of them don't need a skilled nursing setting. So
right.
we're doing a lot of post-op orthopedic cases in the assisted livings,
yeah.
chosen assisted livings with the appropriate staffing, mind you.
Right.
There has to be, you know, appropriate training and
sure.
preparation. But then providing that home health component in addition to assisted living so that we can take care of them appropriately.
Yeah.
Accountable care organizations, which are basically, their goal is to reduce the overall Medicare spend,
right.
is starting to see some of the value in assisted living also for permanent move-ins, because if they feel as though if they're in the appropriate, they being the resident or the patient in this case, is in the appropriate setting, then they're less likely to go back to the hospital, which costs the ACO
right.
money, which costs CMS, Center for Medicare and Medicaid
right.
Services money. So it's a win-win for everybody, most importantly for the patient or the resident.
Right, and the outcomes actually do end up being better. I think a lot of the early returns, even though they are early, have been quite positive. But on that note, and so that you don't give away the house secrets or anything, I'll ask on a more general basis, but things like residential communities or home care, those non-insurance funded private pay service lines oftentimes are left out of the conversations for bundled payments or for ACOs or for the continuum of care because they're not directly paid by Medicare. But I think that we're starting to see what you just referenced about people looking into that as an option, because even though there is a cost, it's probably less than if that person is constantly back and forth out of the hospital.
And you have to qualify for your Medicare benefits too.
Right.
So if you don't have the three midnights, for example, or if you're not part of a bundle that has a waiver,
right,
then you wouldn't get your Medicare benefits for skilled anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. And so do you see more places being willing to have that lower cost with a higher likelihood of a better outcome than where they've shied away from funding those sort of things or really, considering those sort of options in the care continuum?
When you say they, do you mean CMS?
It would be or bundles or even just hospital or health systems who in the past haven't necessarily looked at the private pay service lines with a seat at the table necessarily.
I don't know that we've done a wonderful job, and I'm talking about industry-wide, mm-hmm. not specifically to any organization, of really educating the doctors and the bundle conveners as to the value of assisted living, because it's not... It sounds simple, but it really isn't. Each state has their own regulation,
right?
And so you have to meet the regs of each state. But I am seeing a willingness by the consumer, the patient, the resident, to consider assisted living for a short stay, even if it is for $150 a day, because that's not much more than the copay is for Medicare,
right?
Right. Number one, number two, for that amount of money, you're also getting nursing supervision. You're getting any assistance that you need with nursing care. You're getting three meals a day. There's lots of services that come on top of that daily rate. And then we're also seeing some changes in the payer's mentality around, you know, trying to pilot some scenarios where they are paying for that short stay.
Yeah.
And we're doing some pilots with the payer in several markets right now. We're also doing some pilots with other managed care entities and skilled nursing centers where we're sharing some risk. So it's all in its infancy, but it's definitely has a lot of potential for the future. Absolutely.
So you're obviously referencing kind of industry-wide some exciting things like that. How is first the industry itself innovating as these changes are happening? I think you've already referenced some of them. But, you know, with the ability to use respite stays, for example, for people that are recovering from total hip or a total knee or those kinds of things. But how do you see the industry changing itself moving into the future?
It's a fine balance because the beauty of assisted living and independent living, senior housing in general, is that it's a hospitality model, a social model.
Right.
And so we would never, ever, ever want that to change. Under that, however, there's a higher and higher level of acuity that we're taking care of simply through osmosis of people aging in place and or the advancement in technology to where people don't maybe qualify for a higher level of acuity that would fit beautifully in an assisted living. So I think it's a fine balance to find the operational component of continuing that hospitality model, but then providing that level of clinical services.
Right.
To where it doesn't outweigh the social component, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you think about that and you think about the staffing and the ratios around the staffing and taking care of individuals. And then you think about nurse practitioners and other supportive services that we can provide to someone versus it being a clinical model where it's mandated by the government or by the state to have X amount of services, you know, accordingly.
Right.
So we don't ever want to go that far
on
the pendulum, but we do want to be able to provide the support of clinical services to support the social model, if that makes sense.
Of course. And just out of curiosity, so in the home with home health, obviously home health, the medical visits, a nurse can come a few times a week, one to usually three or so times a week. Are there limits to how much help they can get?
There are. It's state specific.
Okay.
So some states we being the nursing team can't even put on a Band-Aid as for an example.
Right.
In other states they can do a pretty high level of acuity. So you have to be very cognizant of your state regulation. And then of course you have the model, the nursing model where you may have 24-hour nursing supervision, but it may be an LPN model or it might be an RN model. But usually don't see a lot of the RN models in the registered nurse models, in the assisted living yet, because the acuity hasn't really mandated that.
Yeah. Do you see any other, or are there any other big innovations coming, whether it's with Brookdale? I know you guys are kind of on the forefront of innovating, but how do you keep yourself on the forefront of the industry and the way that things are changing with these different payment models and those kinds of scenarios?
We have a team that does nothing but it's so exciting. Every time I talk to this gentleman, he's just going out and uncovering new advances in technology. Yeah. We're looking for ways to stay connected with caregivers to make their experience better. So we have an innovations team. We also have what's called a Bright Ideas campaign, in that we encourage our associates to reach out to the company and to give us their ideas on what they think are new and upcoming innovative things that we can do as an organization. We also do a lot of research and pilots with universities and teaching hospitals.
Yeah.
So that kind of keeps us a little bit ahead of the curve. And I appreciate having a company that's very open and receptive to doing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it does take a little bit of foresight and some stick-to-itiveness, if you will, to see it through.
And financial backing.
Exactly. That never hurts. We're really trying to look at ways to stay relevant, as any company does.
One of the things that we run into on the home care side is that because we haven't been a Medicare payer, has been a lack of data. Do you see that as a barrier to getting some of those partnerships going or starting some of those pilot programs? Or because you have such a large operation, do you actually have a lot of the relevant data anyway?
Well, we try to partner with those companies and or entities that have a shared need or want, in that they will help us track that. Yeah. So if we work with a physicians group, as an example, they too want to know what the transfers to acute are out of the assisted living, what the falls percentages, that type of thing.
Right.
In addition to that, we have our own clinical scorecard, we call it, to where each assisted living community, and obviously Skilled has been doing this for a long time.
Sure.
They kind of watch their quality metrics.
Right.
So that's something that eventually, through osmosis, we're working on how do we develop that so that we can have a whole continuum of outcomes. So regardless of the level of care and services, we have an outcome for each of those levels.
Right.
So that's our next step.
You had talked about some of the short-term stays. Obviously, that's something that you're innovating and starting to get the process going for and the data backed up. Mm-hmm. Do you think that can be kind of a standard practice moving forward?
I think if technology continues to advance and the surgeries that used to be very invasive of the past are now hardly invasive at all.
Right.
That's a distinct possibility. It's just a matter of whether or not, as a company, you make that business decision to move forward with that type of model.
This is just kind of a random question because you had mentioned it, but how do you integrate technology? Because you had mentioned earlier about really being a hospitality industry. I think whether residential or with home care, it's the people. Anyway, we talked about each community having their own personality, and that's what people connect to. But obviously, the world is getting more technologically advanced. Do you see technology coming into the residential care industry in different ways?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of telemedicine that we do right now, from a standpoint of care delivery. And then we have communities that have their own media club. So they all have their iPads and their reporters, and they go out and they use their iPads for education and for exposure to the community.
Sure.
So I think that there's lots of ways to integrate technology. I think that we tend to take things very slowly, which is good.
Right.
And we pilot in certain areas, and we try to make sure that it's something that's a sustainable model for the greater good of the organization before we just roll something out.
Right. I think that we've seen that more recently, where the difference between care companies implementing technology and technology companies trying to come in and disrupt the care industry doesn't necessarily work that way, because, like you said, the foundation is the relationships and the personal aspect and the way that people feel about their caregiver or about their community and the team there. So
yeah, I mean, what would be nice is to have a common platform for all healthcare entities to share, and that there's a consistency with the electronic medical record. There's a consistency with IT interfacing so that there's better communication between the acute care provider and the post-acute care providers.
Right.
But that's something that, you know, each market, again, is very different. So each hospital or hospital system will utilize their own technology for that. But
right.
And we just kind of work with them and align with them accordingly.
And it's difficult for us to have technology that aligns with the hospitals when they don't necessarily even have EHR and different technology that talks to each other.
That's
so
right. That's
it creates its own
but
unique set of challenges.
They're getting very savvy with that, though.
Yeah, it does seem to be moving that way. It just doesn't seem like they've quite figured out how the technology piece that's going to really revolutionize all of this stuff quite yet. And so it seems like you said, baby steps.
And it's competitive. So everybody's right. coming with us with different variations of something new and better, right? And so it seems like every time you turn around, you know, yesterday's technology is obsolete today.
So, exactly.
But that kind of keeps it exciting.
It does. It does. Well, thank you so much for sitting down with me.
It was my pleasure.
Yeah, I had a great time. I know that the audience is really going to appreciate some of your insight here. And again, thank you for having me in Nashville and your beautiful offices. And I look forward to hopefully connecting again in the future.
Great. Thank you so much, Zach. It's a pleasure.